Hello and welcome to an Inside College Hockey podcast for championship weekend in the conference tournaments around the nation, except for College Hockey America, of course. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, host of the Inch podcast, joined by a full house tonight as WCHA writer Jess Myers is in the house from Metro Twin Cities, Jess?
Yeah, suburban Twin Cities.
Suburban
Twin
Cities.
Literally, I'm in my house. So
you're in the house in these suburban Twin Cities.
That's right.
Working our way east, Mike Eidelbus in CCHA land, Inch editor and columnist.
Thanks, Arsenio.
Pleasure to be here.
Shout out to the dog pound.
From our headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia, Inch editor Nate Ewell sitting in.
Good to be back.
Welcome back.
I thought you'd be at that George Mason pep rally tonight. But
And from Lowell, Mass., Hockey East senior writer Jeff Howe.
It's also good to be back.
Where did you go?
That's what I've been asking myself for 24 years.
I'm kind of breathless over there. I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's an exciting time for Rook, a University of Massachusetts graduate who saw the Minutemen dispose of the Maine Black Bears, and they're on their way to Boston this weekend for the Hockey East Championship weekend. Jeff, your impressions on the Minutemen, and do they have a chance at winning the whole freaking thing?
Well, I mean, we'll start with my impressions first. I mean, it was an unbelievable atmosphere of at the Mullins Center over the weekend. They set a two-game quarterfinal attendance record with just over 15,000 seeing both games. And, I mean, UMass won Friday night's game similar to how they won the Saturday game the weekend before against Maine. I mean, they got outplayed, but they converted their, they converted a lot in transition, and you know they score. You don't always have to play better than the other team to win. The saying goes, you just have to score more goals, something like that. And that's what UMass did on Friday, and then again on Saturday they came out and you know Maine kind of got off to a quick start, was out playing them a little bit, and then you know UMass got a quick goal. Next thing you know, they got another quick goal. It's 2-0, and they've got Maine on the ropes. And, I mean, the game was over halfway through it. They went up 4-1, and they just kind of cruised all the way home. It was a really impressive performance by UMass. I mean, I thought against Dave Wilson, I thought the UMass would definitely be favored in that series. I didn't think it would happen in two games. But to beat a team like Maine four straight times, I don't care who you are, if you're BC, BU, UNH, or anybody, I mean, to do that is an incredible feat in itself. So, I mean, UMass moved on, and, you know, Maine is most likely done, barring, I would say, a miracle this weekend. I would say Maine's season's over. But and then moving forward to this weekend, I think when I left the Mullins Center on Saturday night knowing the UMass was going to play UNH in the first round, I really, really thought the UMass would have a great chance to beat UNH, and I still think the UMass can and really may beat UNH. I'm not sure. I think what it's going to come down to is the play of Kevin Regan against the play of John Quick. If John Quick is the goalie that he has been over the last month, 2 months of the season, then, you know, I think UMass definitely has the advantage. And, you know, if Regan, you know, stands on his head and makes, you know, 80 more saves like he did last weekend against Providence, then it's obviously going to be a great game. I think the one thing UMass has to make sure that doesn't happen is that they come out strong with a lot of emotion, and the next thing you know, UNH runs off, you know, 2 3-on-1s and scores a pair of goals in the first 5 minutes to go up 2-0. Because, you know, obviously that's, you know, UNH's biggest threat is the fact that they can score just about any time they want. So, you know, if UMass can hang around and take this into the third period as a one-goal game in either direction, then I think I really like their chances. You know, they've won 6 in a row, second longest streak in the country. 4 of those wins were comeback wins. They were down by a goal in 4 of those games. So they've been able to play from behind. They've been able to play from ahead. They've been getting great goaltending. They've been playing decent, you know, above average on special teams. They're playing good defense. They're getting scoring out of four lines. So if I had to go on record for a prediction, I would say UMass would beat UNH Friday night, but I don't know if they would have enough to beat a BC team that is playing as well as any team in the country right now.
And through that statement, you think that BC definitely goes ahead of BU in that other semifinal?
I mean, obviously, BU has beaten BC three straight times at the Garden, you know, all in the last 2 years. So, you know, BU kind of has BC's number in that regard. But, I mean, you can't look at the past, or I can't look at the past when BC's got such an unbelievable, you know, thing going right now. They've won eight in a row, the longest streak in the nation. They're playing unbelievable in every zone. I mean, they're a little banged up on defense. Brian Boyle had to play in the blue line last weekend, which is a bit of a concern for Eagle fans, I would assume. But, you know, with Corey Schneider backing that and that offense, you know, flying around like it has been, the team just looks way too good. And BU, I think John Curry is no longer immortal like he was to start the new year. I mean, he's still an unbelievable goalie, but, you know, he's not playing as well as John Quick right now, I would say. So, I mean, unless you can always count on John Curry to stand on his head and play like he did in the third period and overtime of the Beanpot. And if he does something like that, then obviously it's anybody's game. But BU does not have the firepower to stay with BC. So, I mean, once again, as it's been all season long for BU, it'll really depend on whether or not John Curry can stand on his head, because I think that's what he's going to have to do to keep that team in the game on Friday night. And I don't know if that can really happen.
What went wrong with Maine? They're a team that early in the season we had them atop our inch power rankings, and they kind of slumped a little bit. We thought they were going to get it back together, and well, they showed a little bit of a sign, and now their season's possibly over.
Yeah, well, I mean, they started out, and they were playing unbelievable hockey. Yeah, I mean, you'd probably ask anybody around the country. You'd say Maine was the best team in the country the first month of the season. They were 8-0-1 at one point. I think they started 6-0 or 7-0 before tying, and, you know, whatever. They started 8-0-1. They were playing great. They were scoring. Teddy Purcell was amazing. You know, he was a great compliment to Levier. Soares had another great season. On defense, they were a bit inconsistent in front of Ben Bishop, and that kind of hurt him a bit. I think, you know, and from what some of the players have said throughout the season, I mean, they just fell into one of those traps that they thought that they could put the Maine sweater on and they wouldn't have to come out and bring it. And, you know, you can't do that in a league like Hockey East. You're going to start losing games, and you know, no matter, you know, if you can turn it on at the end of the season and your team like Maine with the out-of-conference schedule, then, you know, you can usually sneak into the tournament. But all those losses in the middle of the season don't look too good when you lose four in a row to UMass to end things. And obviously, towards the end of the season, losing Ben Bishop and not having him full strength for the last month was huge. And then when he had an even worse, he suffered a completely different groin injury heading into the final two weekends of their season. And, you know, just it's too much to ask a kid like Dave Wilson, who has such limited experience, to come in that type of an atmosphere and that type of a situation to be able to, you know, come out and win games. And Wilson played, you know, good hockey. He really did. This wasn't his fault. But I think if Bishop was in net last weekend, the results may have been a bit different.
I think I have to
throw it.
Oh, sorry. I was going
to
say,
I'm going to throw it to you, Buzz.
Oh, I was going to just chime in. I think I have to disagree about Maine not being in the NCAA tournament. I think they're going to make it so long as all the other conferences, or the conferences that have tournaments this weekend, kind of hold form. As long as there's not a Michigan Tech or a Wisconsin or a Lake State sneaking through and taking one of the automatic bids in the other leagues, or at Dartmouth or Quinnipiac. I think if the top teams in each league hold serve, I think you're going to see Maine and Miami get in. And, you know, both those teams are benefiting from the fact that Denver lost last weekend, Colorado College lost last weekend, and, you know, I think that by that. I think that there's still enough wiggle room for both Maine and Miami to get into the tournament in the last two at-large spots. That's just a hunch.
Since we're on this topic, and you mentioned Denver and Colorado College, is there any chance that either of those teams get in?
I don't think so.
I'm thinking from an NCAA ticket sales standpoint and that West Regional in Denver. My goodness, it's going to be quiet there.
I think it is, but if you send, yes and no. If you send a Minnesota there, I think there's enough people. And the one thing you have to remember about the city of Denver is that it's, there's very few people in Denver who are from Denver. It's a pretty transient population. So you've got a lot of Minnesotans in the area. You've got a fair amount of North Dakotans. You know, when those teams would come into town and play at a McNichol, and Denver would play them at McNichols, or even at the old DU Arena in Magnus, you still get a fair amount of Minnesota people there, or a fair amount of Wisconsin people there. So, I don't think it's going to be, obviously it's not going to be anywhere near what it would have been had a Denver or Colorado College been there, but I think that, if the NCAA can find a way to get Minnesota maybe out there, or maybe another WCHA school like North Dakota.
North Dakota would travel pretty well out there.
I would think so too, and it's really not that far from, the western edges of North Dakota to Denver. I mean, it's a long way, but...
And I do know this about that regional, too, from talking to my friends at the University of Denver. I know that the pre-sale of tickets for that regional has been pretty good. So there are going to be a lot of people with tickets out there. I don't know if they'll use them or not, but I have it on good authority that corporations that have called the University of Denver ticket office looking for tickets to next year's Frozen Four have essentially been told, yeah, if you want four tickets for next year, you need to buy about 12 tickets for this regional. So they've been, getting some good corporate support for the regional that way, and there will be a lot of tickets out there. Whether those people will be in the seats, we'll have to see.
Exactly. And, hey, the NCAA doesn't care. The money spends the same.
And the Rockies, capture the hearts of that city every...
Yeah, exactly.
Every goal against first till the 12th or what?
Yeah.
You're going to go up against that.
Till they show up in town.
From the Western perspective, if Maine is in or if Maine is out, what's your guys' reaction to seeing those scores and seeing the UMass win? Because I think from a national perspective, and as the calendar turns to March and April, you start to think a little bit more globally and not so regionally. Maine's always that team that comes through. And traditionally, they've been a team that makes that run in the tournament, that shows up at the Frozen Four. And I think one of the things that caught my attention was this is atypical for that program and that program status. Same with North Dakota. I think earlier this year we said that North Dakota is kind of the Maine of the West, or Maine is the North Dakota of the East, if you will, that even when they're struggling, they seem to put it together. And North Dakota has done that, and Maine did not. Did you guys notice that or stand out to you at all? Start with Mike.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment, and it's just something that as you said, which we've come to expect out of Maine is that they could be down to six players and they're still going to pull it out somehow. That just seems to be the way that program has worked over the past number of years, and there's no reason to expect any different at this point in time. Obviously, the injury to Bishop I think is huge. And relying on Wilson, got off to that great start against Vermont, but then just kind of wilted under the strain of playing all those games in a row. He was going up against a UMass team that was motivated and knew that they were in a position to control their own destiny as far as Hockey East playoffs and the NCAA tournament was concerned. So, I really, going out, get back to North Dakota, and it is kind of talk about a team that or two teams that have been going in the opposite directions. Maine was very good in the first half. North Dakota struggled, and obviously they had a lot of things going on with injuries too in the first half of the season. But boom, the calendar turns to 2007. Maine goes in the tank, and North Dakota has just been playing phenomenal hockey over the last, basically since that series against Minnesota back in January. I like where North Dakota is right now, and I think they're going to win the WCHA tournament. You know, you just look at the other teams and the way they're coming in, and it is the way North Dakota is playing. But I just feel confident about you know, the kind of attitude that they have. And, you know, St. Cloud State really had to slug it out last weekend against Luth, and I don't know how much they have in the tank for this weekend. You know, Minnesota just seems really inconsistent right now, and isn't able to play a full three periods of hockey. You know, if games were two periods, they'd be fantastic. But they just sometimes they seem interested, sometimes they don't, and I don't know if that has to do with the youth or inexperience. But North Dakota seems to me to be the best bet in that tournament this weekend, just because they just seem to have that taking care of business attitude. They're going to go out there, they're going to do what they've got to do, and move on.
Jess, you saw the Gophers. Any answers, or just kind of head scratching?
Or more questions?
I would absolutely concur with what Mike has said, and seeing them from afar, you learn exactly the same things as you see from seeing Minnesota up close. It is just not a 60-minute hockey team right now. You know, I wrote that in my playoff preview that, you know, look at the clock and don't stop playing until it reads 0-0 in the third. And two of the three nights they did that. And Saturday night, you know, this is a Minnesota team playing on its home rink before a sellout crowd, the number one seed against the number 10 seed. And in the third period of a one-goal game, they got outshot 11-3 on their home rink. I mean, it just amazed me to see, you know, and credit Alaska Anchorage for, you know, playing well when it had to. And I still, you know, despite the fact that they had another second half slide, I still see Alaska Anchorage as a potential up and coming program. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, they've got a good freshman class and things are on the right track there. But Minnesota is a head scratcher, and fans are starting to get a little restless. There's a bit of a fatalistic attitude among the Gopher fans I know right now, who have said, you know, boy, we'll see what happens this weekend, but they frankly don't expect much come NCAA time. And you know, the precedent was maybe set last year with the upset by Holy Cross, that, you know, this is a team that obviously was not ready for a three-period effort that night, and lately has looked eerily similar to that.
You know, the one other thing that I would add in addition to that, just watching Minnesota play this weekend, it's not just the inconsistency. It's almost I think I would be okay if with the inconsistency if the effort was there, but they're almost indifferent. It's like, you know, it's like they're going through the motions. At least that's what it seems like on TV. And it's not just the fact that they're a young team, and I, you know, that might play a part into it. But, you know, I look at a guy like Alex Goligoski. He's basically been invisible for the last, you know, six weeks. I mean, they're just coming in to this time of the season, the most important time of the season, with not a lot of things going well for them. And it's not just playing well. It just seems like they don't really want to be there. They think they can turn it on and be Minnesota again. Well, we've learned last season that it's not enough just to be Minnesota. You know, you've got to go out there and put forth the effort, too.
With that said, I mean, you just never know what you're going to get from this team. I mean, playing at the Xcel Energy Center, where in the past they've been very comfortable, and let's face it, they're the de facto home team there. Whoever they wind up playing on Friday night, there will be 14,000 Gopher fans in the building, if not more, and a handful for either Michigan Tech or Wisconsin. So you would think they would have that advantage. On the flip side of that, they're 0-5 in their last five games at the Xcel Energy Center. Surprisingly enough, they have not won a Final Five game the last two seasons, and they got beat by Maine early there this season. So just coming to St. Paul and having a big crowd on your hand doesn't get any points on the board for you if you're the Gophers.
Can I make one more Gopher point before we move on?
Well, we're going to move on? I thought we were just going to close out the rest of the show with the Gophers. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, we could. There's a lot to talk about there. You know, another thing in it, and again, this might just be from what I've seen on TV, but and Jeff, you were at the games, and you've been at their a lot of their games this season. This team seems like they're trying to, I don't know if it's do too much or if they're, I see them come into the offensive zone, they overhandle the puck, you know, it's kind of like a one-man show where they're trying to make this perfect, pretty pass instead of, you know, situations where they maybe should just, you know, throw the puck in the corner and go get it or fire it on the net and go for a rebound or something like that. They just seem, it's almost like these guys are in love with their own talent, and I know they're a talented team, and these guys know they're talented, but, it, you know, it seems like they're wanting to make this pretty pass or, you know, dangle
in retrospect, and this will sound crazy if you're a fan of a team that's, you know, never had a 10-game winning streak, but in retrospect, maybe things came too easily to Minnesota in the first half of the season. You know, you had all these big name, you know, highly touted freshmen that looked, you know, unstoppable for half the season. I mean, I think I've mentioned this stat before, but Oposo in the first half of the regular season had 15 goals. In the second half, he had 2. You know, and who knows what's going on there, but maybe it just seemed to be, you know, too casual, too much, you know, let's show up, let's put our talents on display, let's make the crowd go wow, and we'll win. And for the first half, it worked. And the second half, it's become a grind. I mean, this is a very even 10-team league, top to bottom. You know, if you needed any more proof of that, look at the first round of the playoffs, in which 4 of the 5 road teams won at least one game. 2 of the road teams won their series. I mean, this is, you know, there aren't 3 or 4 just bad WCHA teams like there have been in the past. So, you know, that's not going to cut it, and they're learning that.
Let me share an anecdote that may be humorous. I found it humorous. Which doesn't say a lot. But on this morning's ECAC conference call, and I shared this with Nate earlier today, a pretty funny exchange, actually, between two coaches, Bob Goodett of Dartmouth and George Roll of Clarkson, as they were discussing their upcoming semifinal, which will be the late game on Friday in Albany. And they're discussing a regular season game in which Clarkson came back, and late in the game they scored the tying goal off a faceoff play. And Goodett mentioned that as a pretty spectacular play, and George Roll, the Clarkson coach, jumped in and said, "Gee, Bob, I hope we were hoping you kind of forgot about that." And Goodett said, "Yeah, my guys came back to the bench and said, 'What the hell just happened?'" So,
I'm stunned that a funny exchange in that call didn't involve Joe Marsh.
No, there were several with Joe Marsh also.
I'm sure.
Marsh and Goodett, a reporter asked Goodett to comment on St. Lawrence's season and Joe's coaching job, and they're longtime friends. So Coach Goodett had all kinds of praise for St. Lawrence's season and Joe Marsh's coaching effort and what he's done not only this year but through his career at St. Lawrence. Afterward, Joe Marsh said, "Thank you, Bobby. The check's in the mail." So it was good. I think we've got the 3 most exciting teams in the ECAC Hockey League coming to Albany this weekend. Whereas a lot of times playoff hockey gets real tight defensively and real responsible and safe, you've got 3 teams in Quinnipiac, Clarkson, and Dartmouth that can really open it up a little bit. So I think you're going to see some up and down hockey there. And you've got a St. Lawrence team that comes in as the top seed, who pretty much rolled through the regular season with the exception of 2 games against Clarkson. And they just seem like they've got everything going, and they've been on a high – they've kind of been like Colgate the last few years, where they kind of got to that high level and just stayed there. And they didn't have a lot of ups and downs. So you've got – you know, that's always – I think St. Lawrence goes in as the favorite because of that. But I think the other 3 teams are pretty dynamic, and you could see some big goal totals – down in Albany this weekend. No. At the
could it add to St. Lawrence's favorite status that they aren't the run and gun team, and maybe they play more of that playoff style hockey that could shut down one of those or 2 of those teams?
I think certainly that is part of it that the St. Lawrence has going in their favor, that they can, you know, maybe do that, and they've done it effectively They limited a pretty talented Colgate team to one or two goals this past weekend. Colgate was without standout goalie Mark Dekanich in that series. It didn't make a 10-goal difference, you know, but it certainly would have helped Colgate had he been in the lineup. One thing I mentioned, just going back to, you talked about your playoff capsules, I almost get the sense that St. Lawrence lives too dangerously. And whereas things might have come easy for Minnesota at times, or a team like New Hampshire who can score at will, St. Lawrence is always in those games that come down, you know, with the exception of last weekend against Colgate, but they're always in those games that kind of come down to one break or one bounce or one call or one shot or one mistake, and they've won those games, which is a testament to, you know, their season and their ability, but also a testament to the fact that they got those bounces. They got those breaks. They got those calls. So I wonder if they've borrowed kind of all their favors for the season, if you know what I'm saying. Coach Marsh, obviously a very humble guy, probably more humble than he needs to be, with a distinguished career and a very, very good hockey team, and definitely one of the best players in the league in defenseman Drew Bagnell. But he said, you know, things have gone our way, and he's admitted it, but I think maybe he should take a little more credit than he does also, because he's had a terrific year with that. So,
Is your perception, though, Joe, that people see St. Lawrence as the team to beat? Because I'm not so sure that it's not Clarkson. I mean, you know, Clarkson,
well,
granted they finished below St. Lawrence in the regular season standings, but they beat them. You know, they beat them twice in the regular season, and you know, Clarkson's lost, I think, twice since Thanksgiving. I mean, you know, I think
for my money, Clarkson's the team to beat. I think they are. I agree with you. I don't know what the consensus is around the league. What Clarkson's done that St. Lawrence really hasn't is they really had some clunkers. I mean, the St. Cloud weekend was a disaster. The game late in the season at Princeton was a disaster. They had some really poor efforts along the way. Great job by the Clarkson leadership group and the coaching staff to get things back on track. But it was kind of like, what was the poem, The Little Girl with the Curl? Like,
oh, yeah.
When she's bad, she's really bad. So, you know, not, I guess not to bring this up again for all the Dartmouth fans that are listening out there, but last year Dartmouth got into that semifinal game and lost 10-1.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, it was one of those nights where everything went wrong. I think that Clarkson has a potential to be maybe one of those teams that everything could go wrong at any point. So that's what I think the perception is, that maybe holds Clarkson off from being the favorite. I don't think that'll happen. I think Clarkson is the favorite, and I think they're the best team heading into Albany this weekend.
But it's interesting you bring that up, because there's a lot of similarities between that Dartmouth team of last year and the way Clarkson's been this year. I mean, Clarkson or Dartmouth last year came in, you know, with everything going and
going
in their favor. They had
on the way home.
And they had they clearly had the momentum, and it came to a sudden stop.
Harvard demomentized them.
Yeah.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Repeatedly.
Yeah. No Harvard, no Cornell in Albany. I believe it's the first time in 7 years that they won't. Neither of those teams will be in the league championship weekend.
Since we're on the topic of high-scoring semifinal games from last year in conference tournaments, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm making a bold prediction right now. I will say whether it's Wisconsin or Michigan Tech that plays Minnesota on Friday night, they will not wind up 8-7 in overtime. I don't see it happening. That's my bold prediction. It will not be a repeat of last year when St. Cloud State put up a touchdown and then went for two and made it.
Could you see St. Cloud, North Dakota doing that, though? That could be fun.
That could be a high-scoring game. Well, you know, it's
not with the
goaltending
most teams
have. Yeah, it's tough to imagine Bobby Getford, you know, being who he is, and Philippe Lamoureux the way he's played. This could be, I don't know, sad to
say. It's hard to imagine Getford doing that last year, though.
That's true.
I mean, he carried that team that far, and then that happened.
Yeah. And I have predicted that Wisconsin-Michigan Tech, with those two high-powered offenses, will be a 1-0 game in about four overtimes. So I'll let you know early Friday who wins that one.
Score on a corner kick?
Yeah. Exactly.
Is there going to be injury time? Tragic
call in the penalty area?
Injury time. I like
that. Wisconsin and North Dakota could play for, or Wisconsin and Michigan Tech could play for a week, and I don't think they'd score 8 goals.
Why don't they just show the tape of that Wisconsin Cornell game?
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
I'd rather see the tape of buses drive home after that game.
There is no tape. There's no.
Go ahead. Tell the story, bus. For
there's
those
no.
Don't know what we're talking about.
There is no tape. There's no recollection of it either. I remember.
Autopilot.
I think I left Green Bay about midnight, and I woke up in Kalamazoo at about 6.
And you were the only person in the car.
Yeah, exactly.
that's the part that people need to understand.
Yeah, I was the only guy in the car.
I picture a cop in Gary saying to his partner, "What was that? I don't know, but it was going 93 miles an hour."
Rook, I'm going to bring you back in here, and I want to talk about something. You were on the Hockey East conference call this morning with the coaches, and I know you mentioned Jerry York brought this up. One of the gripes I have about this weekend, just nationally and how it's perceived, and we can talk about this, you know, from an entire national perspective, we'll all weigh in on it. It seems like people get so caught up in the NCAA tournament bids that they forget about this weekend and how important it is. To me, I think that everybody weighing in to see what effect a third-place game in the CCHA may have on, you know, Maine status, it kind of defeats the purpose. I think these are great college hockey teams who've had fantastic seasons, advanced to their league championship site, and are playing for important trophies against their rivals. What was the take from Hockey East coaches?
Well, you heard it this morning, but people would tell you this for years now, is that the Hockey East Championship is absolutely a trophy that a team wants to get. I mean, this is, I don't know, I mean, I haven't, you know, broken out the ruler or the yardstick or anything, but I would venture to say that the 10 Hockey East schools are as close to proximity as, you know, any of the schools in any of the other conferences. I mean, these schools are all, I mean, with the exception of, you know, the occasional six-hour drive from Vermont to Maine or from, you know, Providence to Vermont or Providence to Maine. I mean, these schools are all within an hour and a half, 2 hours of each other. So they all have a real natural rivalry with one another, you know, on top of the BCBU, UNH, Maine, you know, UMass, UVM, the smaller budding rivalries. This is absolutely a huge tournament that, you know, the teams in this conference want to win. You know, Nate would say the same exact thing, I would assume. And, you know, it starts off with two great matchups on Friday night, too. I mean, you've got UMass and UNH, who are two state schools, and then that's the matinee. Then, you know, for dessert, you've got BCBU, which is as good of a rivalry as there is. So, I mean, and, you know, you got the extra motivation from BC's side that, you know, they've lost two straight bean pots in a Hockey East Championship to BU. So they're going to want to get back at it. And, you know, UNH has lost 2 out of 3 to UMass this year, but, you know, UMass is the underdog. UNH is the regular season champion, but UMass is still, you know, I would say on the inside of the bubble, but, you know, UMass is still looking to win this thing, get back to the conference championship where, you know, in a race that triple overtime nightmare. I mean, you've got UMass trying to build a legitimate program and crack into the so-called Big Four. You've got, you know, UNH trying to prove to the world that, hey, you know what, the end of the season was kind of a fluke, and, you know, we did win this conference regular season championship for a reason. And, you know, this trophy isn't, you know, an afterthought. These teams aren't saying, you know what, whatever happens this weekend, no big deal, because we've got something bigger on the horizon. Well, you know, I'm not saying that these teams would cash in a Hockey East championship or NCAA championship, because that's obviously not the case. But there is not going to be a team playing this weekend that isn't going into this weekend thinking that it can't win this thing, and that includes UMass. I mean, there are 4 teams going into the Garden on Friday night who fully expect to be going back on Saturday. And of the 2 teams that are going in there on Saturday night, each one of them is going to think that they're going to be holding the trophy at the end of the night. So, yeah, I mean, This is definitely a huge thing. I guess it's kind of like the bean pot out here where nobody else outside really cares much about it, but everybody who's still playing wants to win it.
See, I think it's not just Hockey East. I think it's across the board. You look at, you know, some of the teams that are still in it. And yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of fans who kind of look at it as a big picture thing and say, well, you know, BU can lose. They're still going to make the NCAA tournament, and so on and so forth. But I guarantee you, none of those guys in that locker room are thinking that. But I guess getting back to my original point, how big would UMass winning the Hockey East championship be for that program? And how big would it be for Quinnipiac to win the ECAC Hockey League championship? How big would it? I mean, you can look down the list, you know, how big would it be for Notre Dame to win the playoff championship? You know, those kind of things. How big would it be for Michigan Tech to play on Friday, for crying out loud, let alone win the championship? You know, just being there, I think, is a huge deal for them. I think there's so much more significance to this weekend
than just
jockeying for positions and that type of thing.
On the topic of Michigan Tech, Mike, let me say this. It's huge for that program just to be there. I mean, having not been to a Final Five in 11 years, you know, still having not hosted a home playoff series since 93, it's gigantic for that program and for their fan base. You know, if nothing else, it means to them, we're on the road back. You know, finally the recovery project has begun in earnest. You know, we're a team under consideration again. But looking beyond that, for Michigan Tech especially, if you win Thursday night, you know, so you get to play two more games in St. Paul, you're all of a sudden a real legitimate NCAA tournament team in my mind. I mean, if you're one of those people who looks at computer rankings, they're right there on the bubble, and a couple wins this weekend, even if it's in a third-place game, you could have the Huskies going to the NCAAs for the first time since, get this, 1981. They were in the Frozen Four and have not been back to the NCAA tournament since then.
What about the two-year contradicting Gladys? Sorry.
Exactly. But, you know, there's another point that I want to make about this whole thing, and it kind of goes with Notre Dame. And, you know, sure, Notre Dame won the regular season title, and that's great. And it's a huge occasion for them. But I think that there's something significant, too, about a team like Notre Dame or a team like UMass winning the playoff title and getting the opportunity to skate around with that trophy in Joe Louis Arena or in whatever the Boston Guards called today. I think Notre Dame, for crying out loud, was in Alaska 3 hours from faceoff when they won the CCHA regular season title. And sure, it's a great achievement, but, I mean, how do you celebrate that? I think that there's something momentous about, you know, the horn going off and throwing those gloves in the air, throwing the sticks, and having that on ice celebration that makes this an important weekend. And, you know, in the case of at the Excel Center, there'll be 18,000 plus people there, and, you know, there'll be a full house in Boston, and there'll be 8,000 people at Joe Louis Arena. But
you don't get you make a good point. You don't get many chances to celebrate a championship, and these guys should enjoy it for all it's worth.
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Playing for a trophy.
Exactly.
One of the gripes that I have about the conference championships is this weekend that just passed us. To me, it's such a downer to start the playoffs, and some of you guys, Gladys, I know, started 2 weeks ago, but it's such a downer to start the playoffs, where it's supposed to be the culmination of your season, with mismatches in the better team's rank that are probably going to be sweeps, or, you know, maybe if Minnesota sleepwalks, it'll go to three games. Now, to me, is the excitement. This is the fun.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we get to single elimination. This weekend, between these five trophies getting awarded, the selection show is a blast to me. I love that. I love Sunday, one of my favorite days in college hockey. But it's the games, really, that are what make this special and what start to make this time of year special.
Yeah, it's about the games. It's about the games.
Yeah, it really is. And, I, you know, and if you need if you need proof that conference tournaments just in and of themselves can't be wonderful things, take a look at the CHA tournament last week, and I think that's pretty much all the proof you need. I mean, who thought Alabama Huntsville? I mean, they came in, and Jess, you and I saw them play in Minnesota, and they weren't real good at Christmas time. I mean, they were.
No, I mean, you know, they held serve with Minnesota, I guess I would say, but no, that wasn't above average hockey team by any stretch of the imagination. But hey, shout out to Doug Ross and his final
season. Now they're there, and they win three games.
I shouldn't have discounted that from last weekend, but other than that, last weekend was boring.
No, you're right. It is.
I hate it, to be honest. I loved watching the CHA game on Sunday because
it had some meaning.
The nonsense out of the way. Yeah.
Well,
they were playing. Yeah.
I think the other thing that bothers me about this weekend, and I like, you know, I do like it all. I like the semis. I think the Friday is great because there's so much hockey. I mean, it's just wall-to-wall hockey. The one thing that really, where I lose interest is the third place game.
Oh,
Hockey East has it right.
No. Yes.
Win or get out of here, basically. You know, don't play.
Take the hour drive home.
Yeah, exactly. Or here's your
get back
ticket.
Get back on the T.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Apologize to Miss Sullivan about your stinky hockey bag.
Yeah, I mean,
get off their Lansdowne or their, I don't know.
Yeah, jump on the green line. Or
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, Coach Umeli, Dick Umeli said earlier today when somebody asked him about the third place, you know, would you prefer a third place game? And Umeli, you know, you've got to love him for being honest for it. He's like, you know what? He's like, the fans don't want to be there for it. He's like, the fans are going to be up in the rafters throwing stuff at you on the ice because they think they're embarrassed for a team playing in a third-place game. And the team should be equally embarrassed. There's no reason for a team that should be playing in a third-place game in a weekend like this. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I've followed hockey just my entire life, so the whole idea of a third-place game almost makes me sick. So, I mean, I don't understand why the other conferences would do it. I don't understand why the other teams would want to do it. My only experience with a third-place game is the Bean Pot, and that is probably the most grueling game I have to watch all season. I mean, it's just there are 100 people in the Fleet Center for the Garden or the Derek Jeter Center or whatever they call it on a given night. You know,
I thought the Light Bright was the new sponsor.
Yeah, the Light Bright.
The Night Center.
Yeah.
The Mignot Palace.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. A third place game is just it's ridiculous.
A decade ago.
Northeastern takes offense to that comment, by the way. Right?
Yeah, Northeastern and Harvard are...
Let me stand up for Harvard here a second.
a decade ago, in the days of the 12-team NCAA tournament, and I'm thinking from a WCHA perspective here, there were a couple years there where St. Cloud State, which was, you know, an up-and-coming program, and, you know, some would argue still is, but there were a couple years there where St. Cloud State went into that third-place game at the Final Five, knowing that if they won the game, they might get into the NCAA tournament. It served a purpose then when there were 12 teams. Now the purpose it serves is to, you know, add another $10 ticket to the ticket package for the Final Five. And I'll illustrate two reasons from recent history why the third place game, you know, in my opinion, if it wasn't for the...
Farewell.
He just lost the third place game.
That's the ultimate cliffhanger.
We've pulled our goalie.
Next week on the Inside College Hockey Podcast. I think the point that Jess is making, and I hate to get into his head, and much rather be up and coming than steadily floundering. But... But, you know, with a 12-team tournament, it helped get teams in. I think for the ECAC Hockey League and even last year, possibly the CCHA, now they're in a spot where maybe their second or third place team can get it in a large bid with a win. It helped Colgate 2 years ago in the 05 tournament by winning the consolation game. you know, a team like Northern Michigan or Nebraska Omaha, you know, that maybe is ranked in the teens or, you know, 10, 11, 12 area, that can get them in still. So that effect from the 12-team tournament still goes into the 16-team tournament, I just think, in different regions. And, you know, because Hockey East and the WCHA are more important than everyone else, they can, you know, sneeze at the third-place game a little bit. But, you know, that still carries some tournament weight. But again, I don't care because I want to see who wins the championship.
That
I said 10 minutes ago.
That shouldn't be the reason to play a third-place game, is because if one of the teams wins, then they might get the tournament. To me, that's not...
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
That's not a legitimate... I've been...
Kids want to play the game?
Sometimes
a lot of coaches
wonder.
Say that they do. They want to play. They want one more game. Well, a lot of coaches say they want to play that game. It's for the seniors.
A lot of these kids want to play as much as they can.
Right.
It's for the freshmen who might get in the lineup next year. It's for, you know, I think, so for the teams and the players, I think they might want that game.
No, I think, I understand what you're saying.
Unless you're giving out a bronze medal at the end of this game, you can take your third place game and go start an NIT with it, because it's absolutely useless. I don't even know. I hate the fact of it. I hate the idea of a third place game.
I just know that from sitting through how many ever third place games I've sat through in my life, that from the time the game starts, from the drop of the puck, I just want it to be over with. And that's, as a fan, as somebody that's covering the tournament, as somebody that's with one of the teams, not playing in the game, but I just want it just seems, it's like an appendix. It doesn't really do anything.
Back in the day, at least, you got some good scraps in third place games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do that anymore.
There's the other thing that, you know, let's say UMass beats UNH this weekend, BU beats BC, and you've got arguably the two most talented teams in Hockey East. You know, they're eliminated from the tournament, but you throw them in a third place game on Saturday night before the championship, and all of a sudden Trevor Smith, Jacob McFlicker, Corey Schneider, and Nathan Gerber, they all get injured. And, you know, they're of no use to their team in the NCAA tournament. Why? Because they were playing in a game that meant absolutely nothing. I don't know. If you guys can't tell, I'm not a fan of the third place game.
But you like
Kepke, leave him.
You know what? The wild card and the third place game are two completely different things.
right. Jess, you're back, and I kind of tried to finish your sentence, and I hope you heard all the blasts.
I did, yeah.
Oh, good, thank you.
I was going to refute the constantly floundering comment, but I'll take off my 2004 Frozen Four t-shirt first. Anyway, the two examples.
Does that 2000?
You're going to want to hold on to that for 2010.
Does that 2004 Frozen Four t-shirt have the score after two periods on there? Or
that's right.
Does it have the final?
A fine 40-minute effort by my alma mater. No, the two examples I was going to use of third-place game travesties were from 2004. UMD is playing Alaska Anchorage, and Junior Lessard gets hurt. You know, kind of a bad deal if you're the Bulldogs heading into the NCAA tournament. He was able to come back and play a week later, and they win the Hobie. But it was one of those moments like, oh, gee, here's our best player crumpled on the ice. Why exactly are we playing this game? And then last year, you know, Minnesota-Wisconsin at the XL Energy Center, which would otherwise be a huge game, and it's played before, you know, 11,000 or something like that, and at least a dozen of them actually were interested in the game, and, you know, Wisconsin wins just a nothing game by a score of 4-0, and, you know, many people point to that as, you know, the beginning of Minnesota's downfall in last year's playoffs. So, the recent history with the third place game is not great.
Does the X serve beer at the WCHA Final Five?
Yes, they do. And keep in mind, Sioux fans, wear your green on Saturday because it's St. Patrick's Day in St. Paul.
Oh, gee.
I tell you, there's something about, you know, it always falls around St. Patrick's Day, and granted, St. Paul is not Boston, but it is a Irish Catholic community, and there's just something electric about St. Paul on that day. It takes it up a notch. That's
yes,
sure.
It does.
Jess, I want to go back to a point you made about Michigan Tech, and you said it gets them two more games at the Final Five.
Yep.
I think those third-place games, and they may serve this purpose as well, it'll make a team better prepared for the next trip.
Yeah, I would absolutely.
Whether it's UMass,
that.
I mean, you know, for the teams in North Dakotas and Minnesotas and Boston Colleges and Maines and New Hampshire's of the world, you know, they expect to get back there. But let's say, you know, Quinnipiac, it's their first trip to the league championship. You know, let's say a team like Northern Michigan, they don't get there very often. Or a team like Nebraska Omaha, you know, or even Notre Dame.
Lake State.
You know, had they, what's that?
Lake State.
Lake State, yeah, perfect. I mean, these are teams that need to get that experience. I know Lake State plays some regular season games at the Joe, but you know, they need that big stage experience. I think it helps them, and I think that's not something that should be overlooked.
But it's a
no
pressure game in front of no crowd.
Yeah, what does that prepare you for?
Does that really help you? I mean, at least that Lake State Notre Dame game is going to have pressure. It'll have no crowd, but
right.
Yeah. I mean, how fun can it be playing in a third-place game at the Garden when you get to look up and see, you know, 12,000 yellow seats? I mean, it's
at least you get to look up and see Bobby Orr and Larry Bird's numbers.
Right.
How much fun is it?
Looking up and seeing 12,000 yellow seats.
Yeah. Ask,
you must
ask,
be describing the Beanpot Final.
No,
oh!
No, I was going to say, looking up and seeing 12,000 yellow seats, ask Zdeno Chara what it's like. he sees it 42 times a year.
Oh, well.
But
that's
so
I don't know. I think it's a valid conversation. We made a very good points all around.
Are you for it or against it, Gladdy?
The third place game?
Yes.
I'd say for. I'm a proponent.
Cuts into my sleeping time. You know.
It was a heavy pause.
You think I was waffling?
Yeah.
About, I think you were giving it close thought, and I appreciate that.
I think you were in deep contemplation.
Well, here's the thing.
Is it deep
pondering, perhaps? Were you pondering?
During that ponderation, I...
did your hand make it to your chin?
Didn't the Cartwrights live on the ponderation?
It's kind of a personal question. More
which,
hockey is better.
Which chin?
Didn't make it to my neck.
Gladdy, what you do with your hand is your business.
Thank you.
You know.
Well, more hockey is better. You know, and I guess
no,
if you
not.
Say that...
No, I don't think it is.
No.
More good hockey is
no.
better. More good
well,
hockey
no, it's
is
not.
Better.
Having spent Sunday night at Mariucci Arena, I argue no. More hockey is not necessarily always better.
Well, I don't know.
Having spent Saturday night at Mariucci Arena.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, in all this conversation about the third place game, we mentioned half empty arenas or 20% empty arenas or a couple thousand people. I guess I'm the guy who's, you know, the 1,896th person who actually does go and watch that game. I mean, I like it. I like watching games. And I like watching players. I mean, because it's a no-pressure situation, maybe you get to see something about, you know, maybe a third-line sophomore who you never noticed during the regular season, those kinds of things. I guess I'm that guy, so.
I mean, now you made us all feel bad.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Because the guys on the first two lines aren't playing.
they refuse to go out there.
See, Rook, when I say third line, I mean all 12 forwards on the ECAC rosters. I'm just playing into stereotyping.
The top two lines signed ATOs between the semifinal and the third place game. They're all in. They're all on their way to Worcester.
Charleston, West Virginia.
Bridgeport.
Bridgeport, yeah. They'll be with the Toronto Marlies on Sunday.
They're on the phone saying, you ever been to Wheeling? What's it like?
Speaking of that.
Thanks for making us feel that.
Do they have walking tours of the deck available this weekend? Or?
Absolutely. We'll take care of you.
Terrific.
Are we going to have our first D3 podcast next week with an update on
podcast
and all the
podcast? I went to.
Can you say podcast?
Okay. We have one guy. We have one guy involved who doesn't say the letter R. I insert it.
I went to PF Chang's last week and ordered the podcast. It was very good.
Wow.
It was very spicy. Yeah.
Jeff, if we do have a D3 podcast next week, can you talk about your son's hockey career?
Absolutely. Which one?
No.
Man, oh man.
Wow.
That was a delayed gong for PF Chang.
Oh, thank you. That came direct from Shanghai.
Good to know the squirts are in play on the rip fest.
Way to way to take a crack at the mini mites.
Well. Deterioration. Let's officially proclaim podcast deterioration.
Didn't you crack him for wearing the full face shield, the Nick Antipov.
Oh, yeah, the eye tech.
Oh,
yeah.
That thing was hideous. Horrible. Just give in the red tape. Come on.
Red tape is bad, but I don't have any problem with the eye tech.
That thing is so Massachusetts 91. I mean,
Brian Bonham wore an eye tech all the way to the Hobie, folks. So
exactly. What year did he graduate?
all the way to the IHL.
All the way to the San Francisco Spiders roster that one year.
Wow.
I got to see one of Vine's distinguished pro years in Syracuse, and he was good for, you know, the crunch for Syracuse.
He's a poor man's Jock Calendar.
He played...
Don't know
what's Mike Motto doing these days? Anyway, I don't know. Does anybody know?
That was my reaction. I actually, when I was looking for stories for the newsstand the other day, I saw a story that was like, Motto eyeing jump to NHL, and that was my reaction. I just started laughing.
You're like, still? I think he's with the, and I'm not making this up, I want to say the, Peoria. I'm gonna say Peoria.
Peoria what?
Peoria
Rivermen, aren't they?
Of the
American League?
Yes.
Yeah.
The
St. Louis Blues.
St. Louis Blues affiliate.
Aha. I see. I know he was a Hartford Wolfpackian for a while.
I don't know why I want to say that, but in fact
he had an urge.
Yeah. Last year I went to a Peoria game. Played Hamilton. The Hamilton Bulldogs.
Fighting Commissaris, Jan Denis.
Jan Denis did not play the night I went. But Troy Riddle did.
Aha. Aha. All right, any more podcast deterioration? We're easing up on an hour here.
Well, the Minutemen just won the first round of the NIT, speaking of third place games.
When are they bringing back the college hockey NIT? Come on. And for those of you, history buffs out there, there actually was one.
For 1 year.
For 1 year, 1974.
Come on.
It was hosted at the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center.
You can tour the site, Gladdy.
Yeah, you can go see it.
So they have a trophy case honoring the great history of the college hockey NIT.
They have a closed building in Evelyn. They have a banner.
You can peer in through the windows of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame.
Wow. And I think it's a flea market now.
Oh, I don't know. Fruit of Loom 20 packs?
No.
Pick me me up a pair.
All right.
That's great.
All right.
No, you should go look at the deck because you walk in and you... The deck is a terrible building. I mean, let's be honest.
It's an old building.
No, it's a terrible building. There's a
it's
difference.
It's a terrible old building.
Yeah. Glad you, this
so
place,
I feel right at home as the ECAC Hockey League.
No, this place has a... You know how...
It's in that league, best in Gladys.
I don't think so.
There's no chill.
Well, no. The worst
no,
thing
it wouldn't be the best, especially not with Quinnipiac's rink.
No. Yeah. And the worst thing about the deck is that they have that, you know, that like that suspended ceiling like you'd see in somebody's basement?
Oh, yeah. Right.
With those, like, I don't know, what, like fiberglass tiles. That's what the roof of the deck is.
Come on.
Yeah, and then, Jess, didn't Buddy Ryan's kid accidentally step on one once? This is a true story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a kid came falling through the ceiling one time. They used to open up the catwalk above, you know, the press box for, like, photographers and stuff. And, you know, somebody took a step where they shouldn't have and came crashing down onto the surface of the ice.
During a game?
I think it was during, like, pregame. Somebody was setting up to take pictures. No, I mean, you know, I could play devil's advocate and make a defense of the fact that the place does have, you know, it's a great place to watch a game. The sight lines are good and it's intimate and it can be loud, but it's just, it's time has passed. You know, there's talk in earnest of a new building and getting money for it, and hopefully it would be open within 2-3 years. And, you know, I've written about it a little bit, and the time has come. It's just simply time to move on.
Somebody should work on that.
Yeah.
Who? Somebody who works in the state capitol should work on that.
Yeah, nobody really works over there.
Well, maybe they can borrow the Songus Arena if you Lowell decides to up and leave.
Yeah.
they could take
any
it.
Chance I could catch like Sesame Street on Ice or something at the deck this weekend?
You know what? The boat show is probably there. It's probably boat show weekend.
The ports are still frozen, Jess?
I would think so, although it was 60 degrees here today, so it's melting fast.
Beauty. Well, I look forward to seeing that part of the world for the first time.
And we welcome you with open arms.
Thank you.
Bring Timbit.
I'm going to bring Timbits, but... Hey, maybe I will. Who knows? We'll see. Well, that'll do it. Any further deterioration, guys? We kind of skimped out on the deterioration this week.
And
everybody thanks us.
We talked about actual hockey.
Go nuts.
Yeah.
We're raising our game for the playoffs.
I know. We're ramping
our
up.
Our game face on.
They were going to be back soon, right?
We'll be back soon, Sunday night.
Sunday
podcast. So check it out late Sunday night or early Monday morning.
And just to remember, a historical note, last year on Selection Sunday was when the red-crimson discussion took place.
Oh, yeah. We're celebrating an anniversary of sorts.
If we do get tired at the end of that day.
Yeah.
It's a long day.
If North Dakota and Dartmouth both get in, we have to do Shades of Green this year. No?
No.
You got it.
You'll be on that other call, okay?
Yeah, Michigan State also wears green.
St. Patrick's Day vomit green.
Ooh.
St. Patrick's Day beads earned by college co-eds at the bar green.
Glad you'll be on that call.
I'll be on that assignment.
You'll be on that bar.
Absolutely.
And later,
go, Rook.
And later he'll be on the floor below the bar.
Just because he's got
he's not a gopher cheerleader, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I'm no gopher cheerleader. Thanks for listening to another Inside College Hockey podcast. For our distinguished staff, thanks for listening. Keep following the playoffs at InsideCollegeHockey.com.